Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Possessed of an unnatural and legendary hunger, the Reapers have come to Earth to establish a new order built on the harvesting of enslaved human souls. They rule the planet. They thrive on the scent of fear. And if it is night, as sure as darkness, they will come.
Graphic Audio presents E.E. Knights, Vampire Earth.
Narrated by Ken Jackson. Performed by Tim Getman, Lily Beacon, Casey Platt, James Keegan, Dan Stevens, James Lewis, Kate Foster, Tony Nam, Mort Shelby, Dylan Lynch, Joseph Thornhill, Julianne Elliott, Richard Rowan, David Coyne, Ren Casey, Tim Carlin, Scott McCormick, Barbara Pinellini, Elizabeth Dernigan, Eric Messner, Nanette Savard, Thomas Penny, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford. Vampire Earth, Book 8. Winter Duty. The Old Jackson Purchase, Kentucky, November of the 55th year of the Kurian Order. Summer and winter contest the season, with fall waiting on the sidelines as though waiting to determine a winner. Gloriously warm, some might even say hot days give way to chill nights of thick dew and fogs. The trees cling to their leaves like bony old women chary of nakedness, and the undergrowth remains thick and green or brown. A line cuts through the growth, trampled and torn into a furrow that circumnavigates only the biggest trees. A stranger to Kentucky of this era might conclude a bulldozer had gone on a rampage, but to natives, the furrow is instantly recognizable as a legworm trail. Capable of eating their way across country at a steady 3 miles an hour, or doubling that if the riders chain the jaws and scythes shut and prod them along with pokes to their sensitive undersides, the giant yellow caterpillar-like creatures provide a ride smoother than any wheeled conveyance, especially considering the broken-up state of many of Kentucky's roads, cracked when the New Madrid Fault went in 2022 and exploited by new growth. The trail ends at a camp. The two worms huddle next to each other in the cold, contracting as tightly as their segmenting allows. One would almost say, unhappily, were the odd, segmented creatures capable of anything as prosaic as happiness or its antonym. Their skin is never more reminiscent of old fiberglass attic insulation than this late in the year, when new winter growth turns the outer layer into tufts and tatters. Each of the worms bears a pair of curious wooden yokes across its back, projecting from its sides like yardarms of a sailing ship. Each pair supports full hammocks, two to either side of the legworm. A few more walking wounded limp here and there in the camp, bringing food and washing those in the hammocks under the supervision of a blue-uniformed nurse. The nurses look exhausted, having spent the day walking up and down the back of the beast with the practiced air of a circus performer, plunging a hook into a fleshy yellow tuft to drop down and check on a patient, offer water, or adjust a towel hanging so as to keep the sun out of the wounded soldier's eyes. The rest of the camp, not on guard, cooks, bakes, or sleeps dead deep and dirty. There's always too much to do in a hospital train. A thin strip of woodland and a slug-shaped marsh sit beyond the farthest picket, where a pair of figures lies on their bellies just below the crest of one of the low rolling hills of this quarter of Kentucky, where it falls off toward the Mississippi River. Their prone bodies are pointed, like a pair of compass needles, at another camp, smaller in numbers but more spread out in size, a careless campsite, more interested in avoiding one another's smells and sounds than organization or security. The watchers are male and female, though it is hard to tell by their hair or apparel. If observed from anywhere but atop them, they might be mistaken for a couple of dropped bundles of laundry. The female's long brown overcoat is so patched that the fabric takes the appearance of a camouflage pattern. A thin, freckled face and a fringe of knife-cut red hair can just be made out behind the bug eyes of a pair of mini binoculars. Her longer, leaner companion carries more weapons and gear. He's clad in an odd fusion of weaponry, pebbly leather, and slate-gray uniform that looks more like the overalls a utility worker might wear, with thick padded knees and elbows. He's worn-looking from scarred face to popped and scratched boot heels. In contrast, clean and silky black hair covers the back of his head in a luxurious fall down to his shoulders. Her binoculars sweep from campfire to sentry, from thick, tired four-wheel vehicle to tent to trailer. She's counting, assessing, calculating risk and threat potential. His unassisted eyes remain locked on a huddled group of figures in the center of camp. They're neither tied nor restrained. Instead, they sit behind a staked-out square of construction pegs and red twine, eating hockey puck-sized biscuits the color of gravel from a freshly opened box. Mothers have mashed and soaked them in water for their children. The others either break up the rations with fingers or bite into them, depending on the condition of their teeth.
Give me that! That's mine!
One of the stronger captives, a hulk with a pair of gloves over his ears serving as elephantine earmuffs, wrestles a heel of bread from a weaker old man with a neat goatee. Their guards do nothing to intervene. It's hard to tell exactly what the watching man may be thinking. He keeps his face a careful mask. But a careful observer might note that he's blinking more than his companion as he watches the huddled captives trying to feed their children. David Valentine suspected his eyes were glittering red in the dark, like eyes reflecting a camera's flash in old pictures of wedding guests. The night vision he'd had ever since becoming a cat came with some odd side effects. It was a gift of humanity's Lifeweaver allies in their war against the Kurians, but a double-edged one. While his pupils could open as wide as if under a pharmacological effect to let more light into the sensitive and multiplied rod-shaped cells beneath, this also left him vulnerable to headaches when exposed to sudden glare and color vision that was a little off from what most people experienced. Though the tears still interfered with his vision, Lifeweaver improved or not. His light-thirsty eyes watched the stranger's camp. The sky might have been a pane of glass between Earth and the stars, and the moon would be up in a couple of hours when it would glow like a searchlight. They'd been lucky, oh, so lucky. Both parties had approached and camped without cutting each other's trails, and only his train had bothered with a proper reconnaissance. His wounded and their caregivers were settling down just on the other side of a low hill and a stretch of soggy woodland between. A meeting engagement, then. Whoever found out the most about the other fastest would have the advantage. No sign of scouts discovering his wounded, or he suspected he'd see more action in the camp.
Who do you think they are, Duvalier?
Poachers. No man's land trash.
All the layers of clothing made them look like bloated ticks. A ratty undershirt covered by variegated flannel with a windbreaker over that, and then an old military gear vest with ponchos in assorted configurations, pinned back but ready to rearrange if the strangely warm fall rain started up again. Headhunters, returning from a successful raid, probably bound for Memphis or Nashville. The Kurians had few scruples about stealing population from one another's territories. Human rustling could make a person rich. In this case, what the raiders were doing was a little less dangerous. They'd probably rounded up people displaced by all the fighting in Kentucky in the summer and fall, or perhaps caught escapees from some Kurian principality or other making a run for the free territory across the Mississippi. 12 poachers, plus 2 kids and the women, that he and Duvalier could see. Maybe more in the tents or out of camp hunting or on errands. They were old school with their transportation, a gas ATV, a few motorbikes, tough-looking mules and llamas, a knot of sleek brush ponies, and 2 trucks towing big horse trailers for their captives, riding like livestock on the way to the slaughterhouse. Damned if he'd see them driven into those carts again. But 12. A job for a company of soldiers. Or a small, very careful team. He had one of the best cats in the business lying next to him. She'd volunteered for the operation in Kentucky last summer. He still wondered why. Duvalier lowered the binoculars. The wide, light-hungry pupils turned on him. Valentine picked up a faint glitter in the darkness, like polished copper reflecting flame.
You're thinking about those scruffs, aren't you, Valentine?
Scruffs was slang for future aura fodder. Anything to keep from thinking of them as someone who might be a brother or a daughter.
And if I am?
Will you at least let me go in first and shave the odds?
Of course, Valentine's orders had said nothing about rounding up strays. He had to consider that if it went bad. His wounded could end up driven to the Kurian south or north of here. The rewards, in return for the risk, didn't amount to much. People who had the guts and resources and luck to make it to the Freehold often needed years of education before they were more of a blessing than a burden. Without someone to schedule every moment of their lives, they wandered like lost sheep or were taken advantage of by hucksters and con artists. Their kids, however, took to the free territory like famished horses loosed in good pasture. The ones with memories of the Kurian Zone often made the best fighters for the cause. They accepted the discipline and regulation and privation without complaint. They soon learned that the quisling thugs who'd robbed and bullied everyone under their authority ran like gun-shy rabbits when put up against trained soldiers. Even more, the Reapers, instead of being invulnerable avatars of the local Dread God King, could in fact be hunted down and killed. Colonel Singh, who'd led Javelin across Kentucky in the most skillful march into enemy territory Valentine had ever experienced, had once been one of those children. The Free Republics could use another Colonel Singh. But 12, plus two kids and the women. He couldn't do 12. Not all at once, not without running too many risks of a mistake. Duvalier might be able to, but it would take her all night in her methodical manner. But perhaps he could stampede them. 2 paces away, Alessa Duvalier lay swathed in her big overcoat with her sagging, flapped hunter's cap pulled down low. You had to look twice to be sure there was a person there rather than an old lightning-struck stump. Her eyes sparkled red, alive at the thought of cutting a few throats. Duvalier had a personal grudge against all quislings. She'd selected Valentine years ago to become a cat, tutoring him in sabotage, sniping, assassination, intelligence gathering, all the variegated duties that covert operations in the Kurian Zone entailed. They still bore faint matching scars on their palms that sealed the odd bond between them, a strange blend of mutual respect and an almost filial blend of conflicting emotions.
They'll send out scouting parties in the morning, sure as sunrise.
Bound to cut the legworm trail.
We could nail the scouts headed our way.
Might draw more trouble if this is just an advance party of a bigger operation. Besides, it won't help those poor souls in the trailers.
Let's skip the usual argument, Val. I know you'll just pull rank anyway.
We need someone good with a rifle, just in case they don't bite.
That old worm driver, Brian something or other, he has that scoped accuracy suppressed. He hit a deer on the run with it. His kid's always carrying it around.
They ended up bringing the son, his name was Dorian, forward. The father came along as spotter. Dorian's father claimed the boy was just as good a shot, with better eyes. He'd already seen action that summer and been blooded at what in better times would be called the tender age of 15 at the river crossing where Valentine had taken out a company of moondaggers with a handful of bears. Dorian's swagger showed that he considered himself a hardened veteran. Valentine could just remember what it was to be that young. He outlined the plan and had Dorian repeat it back to him.
Steady now, Dorian. Don't pull that trigger unless they throw down on me, or I signal. And the signal is?
You hit the dirt.
Right. Remember to check your target. I'll be moving around a lot in there. Can do?
Can do, Major Valentine.
It felt good to run. Valentine enjoyed losing himself in his body. Idleness left his mind free to visit the nightmare graveyard of his experiences, or calculate the chances of living to see another Christmas or summer solstice, or think about the look on the old man with the goatee's face when his fellow prisoner ripped the heel of bread right out of his hand. So he escaped by chopping wood, loping along at the old, easy wolf cadence, even the rhythmic thrust of lovemaking. Though the last left him feeling vaguely guilty for not being attentive enough to the woman. Since they'd said goodbye to the bulletproof legworm clan after the battle across the river from Evansville, he had nothing but memories of Tika's vigorous sensuality and the musky smell of her skin. They could be revisited at his leisure. Now he had work to do. He had the sense that their affair was over. Her curiosity, or erotic interest, or, less flatteringly, the desire to cement good relations between Southern Command's forces and her clan being satisfied. He crouched in a bush, watching the young sentry, who seemed to be watching nothing but stars and the rising moon. Valentine checked his little .22 automatic, which he carried wrapped up in a cami with his paperwork. Over the years, he had cause to kill with everything from his bare hands to artillery fire, but he'd found a small caliber pistol more useful than any other weapon. It was quiet, the rounds were accurate at close range, and you could carry it concealed. With the lead in the nose etched with a tiny cross so it would fragment and widen the wound, it did damage out of proportion to the weight of the round. He wondered if the Kurian's death machine avatars, the Reapers, felt the same electric nervousness when they stalked a victim. Of course, in a meadow like this, in open country, Reapers did not stalk, or at least not for the last few dozen meters. They acted more like the big, fast cats Valentine had seen loose in the hill country in central Texas, covering the distance in an explosive rush that either startled the prey into stillness or made escape futile. Of course, in the city, it was something else entirely. Urban Reapers were the trapdoor spiders of many a ruined block, striking from a patch of overgrowth, a pile of garbage, or a crack in the ceiling. But he doubted these headhunters worked the cities. Too much law and order, even if the bad law and order of the KZ. He turned his senses to the camp, trying to get a sense of the rhythms of the headhunters. Three of the men were slumped in the grass, staring into a fire as they passed a bottle back and forth. The sentry sat in a tree overlooking the bowl-shaped field and soggy patch within hallooing distance of the camp. The safety went back on the little 22 for now. Valentine guessed why they put the youth on watch. Young men had good eyesight, especially at twilight. He'd probably be relieved by a veteran for the late shift. The boy chewed on bits of long grass root, glancing back toward the camp for signs of his relief. Valentine balanced the chances of the young man doing something stupid against the possibility of using the kid to get into camp armed with some bargaining power. If Valentine just approached the poachers, they'd have him face down in the dirt until they secured his weapons at the very least. Valentine wormed his way up to the trunk from downwind, using a mixture of crawling and scuttling during the sentry's frequent glances back to look for his relief. The relief sentry started his walk uphill to the lookout tree, holding a heavy, swaddled canteen by its strap. Valentine loosened his sword and pocketed the automatic, grateful that he hadn't had to use it. He shifted to his submachine gun, double-checking the safety.
About time.
Valentine moved quickly, clapping a strong left hand over the kid's mouth and elevating the kid's wrist to his shoulder blade with the right.
Don't crap yourself, kid. I'm not a Reaper. But I could have been. I want you to remember that when we get back to your campfire sing-along. I could have been. What's your name?
Trent. Sunday Trent.
Sunday? Like after Saturday?
Yes, sir.
Knock off the sir, boy. I'm not some local trooper you have to polish. They call me the Last Chance.
Valentine couldn't say why he picked the name. One of the Moondaggers had called himself that. An emissary sent to deliver threats and ultimatums. He hadn't intimidated the Southern Command's troops. The quickest way to get their backs up was to start making demands and informing them that they were beat. Valentine thought of tying the kid's hands. He had spare rawhide twine in a pocket, as it had lots of uses around camp, but settled for looping his legworm pick in the back of the boy's pants and prodding him along with the haft. Less aggressive that way, and it kept Valentine out of elbowing distance in case the boy made a gesture born of desperation or inexperience. Being careful about others' actions as much as your own was how you stayed alive on Vampire Earth.
Sunday, I need to talk to the boss of... What do you call yourselves? Gang?
Easy Crew, sir. Blitty Easy's crew.
Which one's Blitty Easy?
The one with the tall hat, sir.
Call me Chance, Sunday.
The one with the hat... Chance.
The relief sentry was a man with no less than 9 old-world jujus around his neck, a mixture of car manufacturer iconography and bandless watch faces. Valentine recognized a Rolex or Bulova dangling from gold chains. Valentine remembered some of the decorations as Gulf Coast Reaper wards.
Keep your mouth shut, Sunday.
Hold up!
The camp was contracting like a turtle tucking in its limbs for the night. One of the poachers shoved a captive into a tent by the back of her neck. She didn't struggle. A pregnancy was a guarantee of life in the Kurian Zone, both as proof of fertility and for the sake of the new member of the human herd.
Easy now, easy crew. Just relax, Sunday. All I want to do is talk a bit.
Sunday led him into camp, and people gathered, naturally curious about the stranger. Weapons were readied, but not pointed.
Who's in charge here?
That'd be me.
Then you must be Blitty Easy.
Blitty Easy's legs held up a stomach that jutted out like a portable stove. Not flab, exactly, but the heavy center of a powerful man. Valentine had to admire his sartorial taste. From the dirt pattern on his extremities, Valentine surmised he drove the ATV. Valentine hadn't seen a beaver hat since New Orleans, at least, if not Oklahoma, and this one had a lush shine to it that spoke of either recent purchase or tender care. Everything on him looked bright and expensive, from the silver tips on his shoes to the diamonds fixed to the skin in the place of one shaved eyebrow.
Careful now with that gun, stranger.
I'm here to talk, not shoot.
Even shooting off your mouth can be dangerous around me, injured man. What's the matter? We grab somebody's air? You the big tough man they sent to get him back? No, her back?
I think bigger than that. I want the whole bunch. Leave the bonds. I want to present them wrapped up like a big bouquet.
You talk pretty big for a man with nothing but a dumb kid in his sights. You can shoot him if you like. Serves him right for letting himself get snuck up on in that tree.
What direction you going, Sunday?
South, Memphis?
Shut up, Sunday.
South. Good. You won't have to circle around to avoid us. You can just keep on track.
Valentine walked Sunday around the circle of onlookers. Each took a step back as he approached, and he held his right fist cocked so his brass ring was at eye level. The circle of men and guns around Valentine widened and spread and thinned as though he were rolling dough. They eyed the submachine gun at his hip. Carrying a quality firearm like that openly marked one as either a tool of the Kurian Order or someone operating outside it. Easy's crew maintained their well-armed independence by living on the fringes of the masquerade of a civilization beneath the towers. Deadly as his weapon was, some would say the brass ring on his finger was the deadlier weapon. It was the mark of Kurian favor. A wearer was owed respect, for the fear and favor of the Kurians hung about the ring's owner like a king's mantle.
Who do you think you are threatening my crew?
Who am I? A man tested by the only law that lasts, that of the jungle. I speak 3 Grog dialects and have a foot pass for half the tribes west of the Tennessee and Ohio. I've watched Twisted Cross tubs open, ridden the Cannonball St. Louis to L.A., and flown with Pip's Circus. I've sailed the Caribbean and the Great Lakes and Puget Sound, humped hills in Virginia and Baja, tickled lip from Albuquerque to Xanadu. I've won a brass ring and the power to put you all in unmarked graves. I'm your last chance, Blitty Easy.
Why are you bothering with us then, Mr. Big Shot?
The old folks are interested in Kentucky right now. They don't want to see another state fall to the guerrillas. We're on our way to talk some sense into the more friendly locals. I thought my goons would have to forage for heartbeats, but you went out rounding up strays and did the job for us.
We get paid for?
Payment is, you just hand over your collection without going in the bag with them. My old man likes keeping brimful on oro when traveling, and he's not particular.
He's bluffing, Blitty.
Kiss my ring and check it out. I don't mind.
A brass ring on its rightful wearer accumulated enough bioelectric charge to tingle when you touched your lips to it. Valentine found the sensation similar to licking a battery. His brass ring, fairly won in Seattle, was legitimate enough, and he usually kept it with some odds and ends in a little velvet bag along with a few favorite hand-painted mahjong pieces. Though he'd lost his taste for the game long ago, they still made useful tokens for sending messages to people who knew him. The only tarnish about the ring was the mark it had left on his conscience. Valentine could tell the crew was impressed, even if Blitty Easy still looked suspicious.
Or you want to test me some other way?
Regular Sammy Rye with that blade.
Deal without the talent to back it up, it's just so much butter knife.
Valentine's options for a relatively peaceful solution were running out, but he had one last card to draw. His imitation of a Reaper scream had worked once before, a dozen years ago, several hundred miles north in the hills of western Illinois. It might work here. Valentine's reflexes moved ahead of his regrets. Valentine knocked Sunday flat. No rhyme or reason to the rest. The fat was in the fire, and he had to move or burn. A hand near him reached for a chest holster to his right, and he swung his sword in a sweeping blow. He spotted the shotgun barrel as it wheeled towards him. The man behind him absorbed the blast, turning his cheek into red mist and white bone. A poacher put a banana-clipped assault rifle to his shoulder. His hair lifted as though an invisible brush had passed through it, and he went down, a thoughtful look on his face as he toppled. Valentine rolled free, dropping his sword and reaching for the little submachine gun he carried across Kentucky twice as he ran out of the firelight. With a shake, the wireframe folding stock snapped into place. The poachers had pitched their tents in a little cluster, and he moved through them. He saw a shaggy back with a bandolier and planted a triangle of bullets in it between the shoulder blades, moving all the while, zigzagging like a man practicing the foxtrot in triple time. Turned out the 12, and then some, could be taken without too much of a risk. These weren't soldiers. They were brigands, used to preying on the weak. They popped their heads up like startled turkeys to see where the reports of the sniper fire came from and received a bullet from Dorian's rifle. Pairs of men moved together instead of covering each other. Valentine cut down two as they ran together toward the machine gun pointed impotently at the sky. Among the other bandits now retreating into the night, Valentine spotted a figure with long hair running, dragging a child.
Please, Dorian, don't get carried away.
There was only one headhunter Valentine wanted to be sure of.
God damn it!
He wasn't that hard to find. A brown-coated figure burst from the brush as Easy swept past. Duvalier executed a neat thrust under his shoulder blades. Duvalier kicked the corpse and then waded through the brush to Valentine, sniffing the beaver hat suspiciously as she passed.
That was a good piece of killing, if I do say so myself.
Duvalier wore that old, fierce grin that made Valentine wonder about her sanity. She kneeled down beside Easy's body and lifted his coattail to her sword.
This thing might be nice for winter. Ugh, smells like garage gunpowder and hair oil, though.
Valentine and Duvalier covered each other as they inspected the camp. The only one left alive was Sunday. He looked around at the bodies, shaking like a leaf.
They said it was good money. Easy work. Easy work, that's what they said. Easy crew, easy work. Get rich, bring in rabbits.
Should I take care of him, Val?
He's just shaken up. We can let him go. You load up a couple of those llamas and go home to Mother, boy. Kentucky's harder than it looks.
Yes, sir.
Valentine and Duvalier circled around away from the bodies to check the prisoner pen. One young girl, no more than 6, lifted one chained together leg as though asking for assistance with a fouled shoelace.
There's gotta be a bolt cutter in one of those trucks. See if you can find it, Smoke.
Roger that.
What's gonna happen to us?
We're turning you all loose. We're heading west, all the way across the Mississippi. Any of you want to go that way is welcome to file along behind, under Southern Command protection.
You want us bringing our supplies, Captain?
What do you got?
Valentine looked at the captives' rations. Blitty Easy's crew fed their captives on the cheap, as you'd expect. Hard ration bread, sticks of dried legworm segment divider, interesting only as chewing exercise, and sour lard, with a half-full jar of a cheap orange mix that tasted like reconstituted paint chips to drink. Though it did sanitize water. They'd be better off cooking the poachers for food, but of course Valentine couldn't suggest that. As Valentine walked back toward Dorian's sniper perch with Duvalier, he refilled his submachine gun's magazine from a heavy box of 9mm rounds he'd found in one of the locked glove compartments. It had yielded easily enough to a screwdriver.
What the hell was that, Smoke?
A darn good killing.
I said I'd make the first move.
You screamed, Val. I thought you were calling for help. I gave the order to fire. What's your malfunction, David? They're just border trash.
Major, if you please.
Just doing my duty. You even remember what yours is? We're supposed to fight them in as many places as possible. The fire of 1,000 angry torches. Or however that speech by the former old world president went.
The mood passed, as it always did. Valentine was more vexed at himself than Duvalier. At least she had the guts to admit she liked killing. Valentine felt better as they gathered Easy Crew's collection of aura fodder and vehicles and brought them into camp. A sergeant gave the usual recruiting speech as they broke camp the next morning.
Anyone who wants to join the fight will head back west with us to the Southern Command Forward Operating Base at Evansville. But we got an important job for you right before that. We need men to load up the wounded in these vehicles.
They ended up with two new recruits. A 15-year-old boy with a lazy eye, and a widow of 41 who'd learned to use a rifle as a teen in the Korean Youth Vanguard.
I quit when my mom got sick in her uterus and they stuck her in a van. Mom was right smart. Could have been useful 100 ways if they'd let her get operated on and recover.
Of course, Sergeant Patel, the senior NCO back at Javelin, could make soldiers even out of odds and ends of human material. There was always more work than there were hands. The recruits' presence meant more aura for the trip home. A prowling reaper would spot their psychic signatures from miles away, even in the lush hills of Kentucky. He and Duvalier would have to team up every night and sleep in their saddles. 4 enervating days later, Valentine had his wounded ready to cross the Mississippi. The Kentuckians would stay on their side of the river. Valentine felt guilty saying goodbye and wishing them luck. They'd pushed their worms on through the cold until death was assured for their mounts. Without a group of others of their kind to coil with in a knitted cocoon to protect the fall's eggs, the frost would take them like delicate fruit. Dorian surveyed his and his father's legworms solemnly. He'd been quiet ever since shooting 6 of Blitty Easy's crew on that wild, clear night.
These two are goners, I think.
We'll compensate you and your pa somehow.
Wish they could get me back that knife. The one with the shooting.
Valentine felt for the young man. Dorian had stepped across a terrible threshold far too young.
He followed orders and did what had to be done, Dorian. Better than that, 30 people are going to live to a fine old age because you're a good shot. Remember that.
The youth nodded dumbly, and his father nodded him back toward the high saddles. Duvalier embraced Valentine with one of her characteristic hugs, half handshake and half lover's embrace. She nuzzled the bristle on his chin.
I'll see that they get back all right. Any orders for me back in Henderson?
Be careful. I think if the Kurians move on us, it'll be from the ordnance. You check the rail lines up that way.
Can do.
I won't be gone long. I'm just gonna give my report, see about supply and replacement, and return.
Duvalier slipped away, as though bored with the goodbye, and Valentine returned to supervising the river embarkation. Javelin had left Southern Command with bands playing and people cheering and tinfoil on their heads. Its wounded returned under cover of darkness, hauled across the Mississippi in some of Southern Command's Skeeter Fleet twin-engined outboards, ready to make wake at the first sign of trouble. No crowds met them on the western shores, just a deputation from Forward Operating Base Rally's commander at the edge of the Missouri Boot Heel. Colonel Pizarro looked incredulous when Valentine announced that he'd been returned with fresh wounded from a hard-fought victory in western Kentucky. Valentine handed over a sealed report to Southern Command from Colonel Bloom, now in command of what was left of the expedition to the Appalachians.
Well, don't be stingy with the steaks and beer. They walked a hard trail. They deserve a few luxuries with their laurels.
Tell me, Valentine, don't hold back. How bad was it over there? Papers are playing it down or calling it a catastrophe.
Could have gone better, but it wasn't a disaster. We gained allies, just not where we expected. I'd call it a major victory for the cause.
Victory? Not according to the Clarion headlines. Or are you aiming for a nice long rest somewhere quiet with lots of watercolor paint?
It was a win for the good guys, Colonel.
You're selling that at headquarters? I wish you luck.
Southern Command, Mississippi Operational Area Headquarters, the second week of November. The architects who designed the mall at Turtle Creek in Jonesboro would still recognize their structure, though they'd be surprised to see some of the renovations caused by war and necessity. One of the anchor stores had been hollowed out and turned into a vast machine shop for the repair and renovation of valuable electronics, and the rest of the big box stores served as warehousing. The smaller shops have been converted to training classrooms, meeting areas, offices, break rooms, a medical center with a pharmacy, even a kennel for the bomb sniffers and guard dogs. Only the food court is still more or less recognizable. If anything, it is a little more interesting, thanks to cases displaying unit histories, photographs, and citations. And some of the hardy palms planted inside by the builders have survived the mall's looting, deterioration, and restoration. Most of the exterior doors have been welded shut, and netting and silent anti-aircraft guns dot the roof. Barbed wire encircles the parking lots, scattered with buses, trucks, and staff four-wheelers and motorcycles ready for use and dispatch. The polished floors are patched, and the ceilings are being rebuilt in some areas to repair minor earthquake damage the mall received in 2022. David Valentine, having passed through the security station and visitor's lobby taking up the old bookstore, idles with a yellowed copy of French military history on an upholstered chair that smells like cigars and mildew and body odor, his thumb smeared with ink for an ID record, and his bad leg stretched out where it wouldn't interfere with passersby. He fought off a yawn as he waited. On the other side of the old store, security staff search and inspect those passing in and out of the headquarters, not a yawn to be seen. The Kurians have their own versions of cats. The ink had dried by the time General Lehman's adjutant appeared. The staffer might have been a living mannequin of crisp cotton and twill. Valentine felt scruffy shaking hands with him. All Valentine had managed in the washroom was to comb his hair out and wash his face and hands. Perhaps it wasn't the chair that was so odoriferous after all.
You can take that book if you like. It's all Southern Command Library. I'm sure you know where to drop it.
Thanks for the tip.
Valentine didn't need it. He had visited the quiet library and reading room in one of the mall's old stores to unwind after the quick debriefing he'd undergone on his arrival yesterday afternoon. Three paperbacks, one with a duct-taped spine, the illustration of the dripping wet bikini girl on the cover reaching up to undo her top did wonders for circulation, were already stuffed into his duty bag beneath the reports and javelin correspondence. Valentine and the interviewers talked about Javelin, good and bad. When Valentine gave them his assessment for the addition of Kentucky to the United Free Republics, his interviewers had exchanged a look that didn't strike Valentine as promising. And he hadn't even begun to describe what he had in mind for his Quisling recruits. He saved that for the end, and they told him to take it up with General Lehman the next day. There was another wait outside Lehman's office, and Valentine switched to American History, a biography of Theodore Roosevelt. He was experiencing the Badlands with Roosevelt after the nearly simultaneous deaths of his mother and wife when Lehman's staffer summoned him. When Valentine finally stood before the general in command of the Eastern Defenses, he was surprised to see a pair of arm brace crutches leaning against the desk, and the general's right leg encased in plaster and a Velcro ankle brace on the left.
Bomb beneath my command truck. It flipped us like a flapjack.
He looked paler than Valentine remembered, thin and strained. Lehman dipped his little silver comb in the water glass and commenced cleaning his drooping mustache in the methodical fashion a cat might use to clean its face. It was whiter and less bushy than it had been a year ago at the planning sessions for Javelin. Cover Lehman in dust and denim, and he passed for a cowhand straight off a Texas ranch. Valentine had heard that as a junior officer, he'd been in signals, communicating with other freeholds around the world.
Should really make you a colonel, Valentine.
What about the confirmation vote?
Southern Command was allowed to run its own affairs within the confines of its budget, and parts of it even made money by engaging in civil engineering projects or restoring machinery. But promotion to colonel and above had to be approved by the UFR's legislature.
Clarin were getting a huff, and their chickens in the legislature would squawk in tune, and the whole list would probably be voted down. They've had a field day over Javelin. You understand?
I do.
Of course. There's no reason we can't pay you like a colonel.
Under the assumed name.
Technically, David Valentine was a wanted man and couldn't draw pay, civilian or military. Not that it would do him much good if the pay increase went through. Few colonels got rich, despite their pay draws twice that of a major. A colonel was expected to spend most of it on entertainments for his command, and most also gave generously to families of the command who'd lost fathers or mothers. a private who was good at scouring arms and medical supplies and selling them back to the logistics commandos, could do better.
There is one promotion I'd like you to make. I'd like Sergeant Patel. His name is all over those reports. Made a captain.
Shouldn't be a problem. I've heard the name. A wolf, right? 20 years or more?
That's right, General. I can't help but noticing all the boxes, sir. Moving to a new office?
That's one way to put it. You didn't hear about the election then.
Pretty hard in the free republics, beyond what filters into the mess hall chatter and newspaper articles, sir.
There's been a change, as of the first week of November. President Stopp lost. Adding Hal Steiner to the ticket didn't help as much.
I'm sorry, General. Hal Steiner? From down south near the Louisiana border?
Yes, of course. You've been out of the UFR. Sorry, it's all anyone's been talking about here. Steiner's a friend of yours?
I met him as a lieutenant.
Yeah. He's the one who helped keep all the Archangel forces hidden down in those swamps. The Concord Party made a big deal about Steiner coming out of the KZ and treating grogs like people. And between that and the bad news out of Kentucky and the Rio Grande, the new Federalists were plastered. Anyway, old D.C. is out, and Thurgood is in. Once Leitz is sworn in, he'll nominate Martinez to take over Southern Command, and I suspect the legislature will approve. Though the Texas Bloc will be voting against him, of course, because of the bad feelings about 73.
A piece of Valentine's brain translated the political farrago. Archangel, of course, was the operation that ousted Consul Solon and the Kurians from his brief hold on the Ozarks. In the chaos following, Southern Command seized much of Texas and Oklahoma and a patch of bled-dry Kansas. The United Free Republics, after a messy birth, had divided into two parties, the Concord and the New Federalists. Other than their slogans, Liberty and Justice Through Thoroughgood for the Concord, Starp Can't Be Stopped for the New Federalists, he didn't know much about platforms and so on, though the perpetually dissatisfied Clarion supported Thoroughgood through its editorial page and its reporting. Old D.C. was a nickname for President Starp, not because of some connection to the old United States Capitol, but because he'd earned the nickname Danger Close as an artillery spotter during the tumultuous birth of the Ozark Free Territory. He'd infiltrate Kurian strong points and call in artillery fire literally on top of himself. His opponent, Zachary Thoroughgood, was a scion of the Thoroughgood family, owners of the Thoroughgood markets and several hotels and casinos in Branson. They also controlled a brewery that produced a fine spruce tip ale that Valentine's old CO and Zulu company had been fond of as well. Valentine had first heard of Thoroughgood as a prosecutor who busted up criminal gangs operating from the borderlands, and then for improving electrification and water supply across the UFR as a legislator. Thoroughgood's friends and constituents called him Lights, and Valentine had heard him called Lights, Camera, Action here and there, for he was famously photogenic and traveled everywhere with a photographer. As for the Texas Bloc, Valentine knew that in the legislature there were constant fights between the representatives from the old Ozark Free Territory and the newer regions. Rules of seniority favored legislators from the Missouri and Arkansas areas. General Martinez, of course, was an old enemy. Valentine had put Martinez on trial for the murder of a pair of helpful grogs who'd followed him up from the Caribbean. Valentine had always suspected Martinez had, if not an entire hand, at least a pointing finger in his own arrest after the fight in Dallas that led to his exile from the UFR. Lehman dug around in a pile of newsprint next to a bureau with liquor bottles lining their little rail like spectators. He tossed down a copy of the Clarion. Starp Stopped, read the headline.
I suspect there'll be changes once Martinez takes over. I won't be running the Mississippi front and parts east. All these boxes and such, they're not me getting set to move out. They're from the new broom coming in. There's been a suggestion of malfeasance on my part over Javelin.
Well, how could you know it was all a setup? They fooled Brother Mark.
You've changed your opinion on him, then. Back when we were organizing Javelin, I got the impression he was a stone in your hoof.
He grows on you. Even the men are starting to confide in him. He's like the grouchy instructor nobody likes but still remembers 10 years later.
Soon I'll be a member here. If I don't get retired, I imagine I'll be checking locks on empty warehouses and filing reports on other reports that'll end up going into my superior's report. General Martinez and I don't piss in the same direction on any number of things, starting with Kentucky. He penned an editorial for the Clarion about Javelin Valentine. Of course, all the paragraphs featured the word fiasco with the same arguments. But then the Clarion only has two tunes in their hymnal. Everyone around here is tight as a turtle's ass with the soup pot bubbling.
What are our chances of getting some reinforcements into Kentucky? Garrison and training duty, until they can get themselves organized.
Somewhere on the short block between Slim Street and Nunn Boulevard, I'm afraid, Major.
Whatever's being said about Javelin, it wasn't for nothing. Kentucky's come in on our side, more or less. The Moondaggers, the one who bled Kansas dry, they've left bodies scattered from the Ohio to the Tennessee.
That was just the first wave, son. The signals and intelligence staff think something's brewing in the Northwest Ordnance. Beyond the usual dance of reinforcements for the river crossings, with armed rebellion just across the river and over Evansville way.
Valentine wondered about Evansville. Technically, it had been the extreme southwestern tip of the Northwest Ordnance, which encompassed the old Rust Belt states of Ohio, Michigan, and much of northern and southern Indiana. The central part of the state organized itself with the other great agricultural Currian principalities in Illinois, south of Chicago.
All the more reason to send us at least something. Without their legworms, the clans in Kentucky lose their mobility and flexibility.
Maybe they won't have any more luck in those hills than we did.
A fresh brigade could make a big difference in western Kentucky. The old legworm clan alliance can take care of the ridges. With Evansville as a supply base, they have hospitals, fuel supplies, machine shops, factories. There's even a company that produces tents and backpacks.
I hate half measures, Major. The way I see it, we either pull out completely or go all in and shove every chip we can scrape together across the Mississippi. I'd like to argue for the latter, but we're in flux right now.
I've got an ad hoc battalion of Evansville volunteers, I guess you'd call them. There's more than that in western and central Kentucky. We could put the brigade back together and have near a division.
But right now in Evansville, all you have is what's left of Javelin and your volunteers.
The Kentuckians chased down the Moondaggers before settling in for the winter. Their legworms have to hibernate, remember? But the Evansville volunteers have the know-how for mechanized operations.
Yes, the staff briefed me on that. You're proposing a sort of French Foreign Legion for ex-Quislings, am I right? They do a little bleeding for us, and in 6 years they get a new name and citizenship in the UFR. Quite a scheme.
Look, I realize I may have exceeded my authority in recruiting local support.
That's what you were assigned to Javelin for, local support.
To hear you tell it, my locals won't have anything to support much longer.
All in or pull out, Valentine. I'm sorry to say it, but all in is just not in the cards this year. That leaves pull out.
Can I at least get some material for my Quisling recruits? They're walking around in black-dyed versions of their old uniforms and using captured Moondagger guns. Not the best of rifles. They're mostly bolt-action carbines with low-capacity magazines. They're fine for smoking out rebellious townies, but not so hot when you're trying to bring down a running reaper.
I'll see what I can do. I know some huge rolls of blanketing or bedding have shown up recently. Guns will be tougher.
What about my offer to the Quislings, sir? Can you give me something in writing to back it up?
I'd be proud to. But honestly, Valentine, I don't think any of them will be around to collect. They'll either quit on you or be killed.
Do you know something I don't, General?
It's been my experience that the top-level Quisling officers are excellent. Well-trained, intelligent, motivated, cooperative. Their soldiers are brave enough. They'll stick where our guys will pull out a lot of the time. But you know as well as I that it's the quality of the NCOs and junior officers that define an army. I've not seen the Quisling formation yet that has outstanding sergeants. They're usually the best bullies and thieves in uniform.
Valentine swung through intelligence next. He had to place a call and be signed in by the security officer at the duty desk in the hall.
This way.
Valentine walked through a bullpen of people at desks and occupying cubicles, passing maps filled with pins and ribbons and whiteboards covered with cryptic scrawls on the walls, and arrived at an office beyond. Post, these days, raided his own adjutant, and Post's office was just beyond his adjutant's.
Hello, Will.
Post beamed as Valentine entered. There was a little more salt to his salt and pepper hair, and a good deal more starch in his uniform, but then headquarters standards had to be maintained. The last time Valentine had seen Will Post, his friend was lying in his hospital bed after the long party celebrating the victory in Dallas and the retirement of the old Razors. Post sported a Lieutenant Colonel's beard these days. Even better, he looked fleshed out and healthy. Valentine was used to seeing him thin and haggard, tired-eyed at the Chinese water torture of minutiae involved in running the old battalion, especially the ad hoc group of odds and sods that had been the Razors. When Valentine had first met him in the Korean Coastal Marines, his uniform bore more permanent sweat stains than buttons. Now he looked like he'd wheeled out of an award banquet picture. Valentine saluted. Post, as a lieutenant colonel, now outranked a mere major, especially one who usually walked around Southern Command in a militia corporal's uniform. Valentine felt embarrassed, trying not to look at the wheelchair. He'd seen it in pictures, of course.
Good to see you. What happened to your ear?
Valentine had left a hunk of lobe in Kentucky. If he could find the right man with a clipper, he should really even them up, even if it would make him look a bit like a Doberman.
Near miss that wasn't much of a miss.
Sit down, Val. I was just about to order sandwiches from the canteen. They have a cold cut combo that's really good. I think there's a new supplier. Cranberries are plentiful now, too, if you're in the mood for a cranberry and apple salad. Our old friend Martinez has made some commissary changes already.
I'll have both. I have an appetite today.
Yes, Private. Yes, the usual, but make it two today.
Valentine glanced around the room. Post's office had two chairs and an odd sort of feminine settee that in another time and place would have been called a fainting couch.
How's Gail?
Good. She does volunteer work over at United Hospital. She's good with me, with the wounded. She says she only does it to forget about what she went through, but she could just as easily do that by sitting in a corner slamming tequila, which is how I met her way back, except she was reading.
Post's desk had too many file folders, reachers to help him access shelves, coding guides, and a battered laptop to have much room for pictures. He had citations and unit photos. Valentine recognized the old picture of himself and Anka on the road to Dallas. Anka, probably his closest friend in the world other than Duvalier, and the big golden grog wasn't even human. He was leading a guerrilla band in the Appalachians, doing so much damage that both sides were mistaking his little partisan band for a large army. He'd seen that same shot on his visit to Molly and her son ages ago. Ever since he'd brought her out of Chicago as a Wolf lieutenant, they'd been family to one another, with a family's mix of joys and heartbreak. Odd that Post and Molly should both like that photo. Of course, the only other published picture of Valentine that he could remember was an old photo taken when he'd become a lieutenant in his Wolf days. What Valentine guessed to be a map or a recessed bookcase stood behind heavy wood cabinet doors complete with a lock. Nearest Post's desk was his set of traveling wheels. Valentine looked at the biggest picture on his desk, a family photo of his wife, Gail, and a pigtailed toddler.
I didn't know you had a child.
We tried. It didn't work. Doc said they found some odd cell tissue on Gail's, cervix. Something the Kurians did to her in that Reaper mill, they think. We more or less adopted.
Good for you.
Well, there's more, Val. It's Moira Stajakowski's daughter.
I didn't know she had one.
Oh, she's a pistol. Only 16 months, but we call her the Wild Thing. Jenny's all Moira. We were godparents, you see, and when the plane went down. Sunshine and rain, Val.
I didn't know you two were that close.
After you were hurt at the tower in Little Rock, we sort of hit it off. She found time for me while I adapted to rolling through life.
You are rolling. Lieutenant Colonel.
I get a lot done. I'm more or less desk bound. Something to drink? I have water, lemonade, limeade this week. Good old Southern Command root beer and that awful cocoa, remember? I can order coffee. I don't keep liquor in the office. Best way not to give in to temptation is to make it physically difficult.
Any milk?
Milk, sure.
The food arrived on a tray, under shining covers, reminding Valentine of the amenities of the Outlook Resort he'd visited and partially destroyed in the Cascades.
Major David Valentine drinking milk. Getting an ulcer?
I'm surprised I don't have one. No, I acquired a taste for it out west, oddly enough. It's comforting. Ulcer or no.
You acquire one here. Anyway, east is more my area. Speaking of which, you owe me a serious Kentucky debriefing. Between you and the Green Mountain boys, it sounds like you cracked the Moondaggers. What's left of them are back in Michigan, licking their wounds and singing laments.
I'm not so sure it was us. They tried the submission to Kerr's will routine on the wrong set of locals. In Kentucky, you can't just wheel into a legworm clan and drag off the 16-year-old girls. Those guys know how to make every shot count. And while you're driving around the hills, they're humping over them on their worms.
Well, we're celebrating here. Those bastards painted a lot of Kansas soil red. We call the area west of Olathe the Bone Plain now.
Valentine remembered all the little towns he'd seen crossing that area with Duvalier. Strange that the Kurians would shed so much blood. Living heartbeats were wealth to them. They talked and ate. Post impressed Valentine all over again with his knowledge of Kentucky, and Valentine was grateful to forget about the wheelchair.
Did Lehman give you the bad news?
What's that?
Javelin, plus the operation against the Rio Grande Valley. Southern Command is probably going to pull in its horns for a while. No more offensives. It's all about consolidation and defensible resolution these days. We've won our ramparts back. Let's be sure they never fall again and all that. We're going back on the defensive.
That doesn't do much good for those poor souls outside the walls.
We tried our damnedest. You should see all the workshops. There are more tires and artificial limbs than shoe soles. You remember Tancredi from the hill? He's there. He got it worse than me. He's wearing a colostomy bag. Our generation's used up. I think younger, stronger bodies will have to see the rest through. We need a rest. You need a rest.
Valentine could believe that. He was so very tired. He didn't mind the stress of fights like that one against Blitty Easy's crew. You aimed and shot, lived or died. It was being responsible for the lives and deaths of the men under you that wore your nerves raw. Valentine was beginning to think he wasn't cut out for that kind of responsibility. But then, if he didn't do it, you never knew who might take the controls. If you were lucky, someone like Colonel Singh or Captain Lahav. But men like General Martinez rose farther and faster. Post waggled a pen between his fingers. Optical illusion gave it a rubbery flexibility. The pen stopped. He gave the old turning key signal Valentine remembered from their days conspiring together on the Thunderbolt. Valentine nodded.
I'm probably breaking enough rules to merit a court-martial here, Val. They've got you on the books as militia, sure, but that's about the same as civilian under our regs. A friend brought in your report, and I made a temporary copy and read it first thing. All these proposals of yours about aid to those ex-Quislings out of Evansville in eastern Kentucky? It's not gonna fly. I doubt it'll even hatch, to tell you the truth. We're about to undergo a reallocation of priorities. As far as Southern Command is concerned, Javelin was a disaster, and the less said and done about what's going on the other side of the Mississippi, the better.
We've got friends in the Legworm clans. We can operate as guerrillas. I'm only looking for a gesture of support. Some gear, boots, and a few boonies to train the men.
Southern Command's trainers of insurgents or counterinsurgent forces no longer wore the old U.S. Army green berets. They'd taken to simple boonie hats, usually dressed up with a brown duck feather for NCOs, a larger eagle quill for officers.
Not my area. I'd say take it to your friend in Special Ops, Colonel Lambert, but she's under a cloud right now. Investigation pending court-martial. Gross neglect of duty. Martinez is making her the scapegoat for Javelin. That giant staff of his has quite a few jaggers.
I love lawyers. Any more good news?
Lots. Well, not so much good as puzzling. We're getting odd reports from the underground, both in the Northwest Ordnance up in Ohio and the Georgia Control. They're very influential in Tennessee.
I don't know much about the Georgia Control other than it's based in Atlanta. They make some great guns. Our guys will carry Atlanta Gunworks rifles if they get a chance to pick one up. Remember those Type 3s?
Good guns. A state run along corporate lines is the best way to describe Georgia Control. Every human a Kurian owns is a share. Get enough shares and you get on the board of directors. Here's the odd feature. they let people buy shares too. By people, I mean brass ring holders, so I use the term loosely.
I picked one up a couple years back. Comes in handy.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what I mean. Anyone who served in the Coastal Marines is half alligator anyway. But back to the chatter our ears are picking up. Here's a hell of a tidbit for you. Our old friend Consul Solon's on the Georgia Control Board of Directors. Would you believe it? 5 years ago, he's running for his life with Southern Command howling at his heels and half the Kurian Order wanting to see him dead for fucking up the conquest of the Trans-Mississippi. And damned if he doesn't wash up on a feather bed. The guy's half Mercury and half Ralvin Fontainebleau.
Fontainebleau was a nefarious importer-exporter on Noonside Passions, the Kurian Zone's popular soap opera. Valentine never did get the soap part, but operatic it was. Fontainebleau ruined marriages and businesses and sent more than one good man or woman to the Reapers. Oddly enough, the drama was fairly open and above board about the nature of the Kurian Order, though it towed the church line about trimming the sick branch and plucking the bad seed. Fontainebleau was the particular nemesis of Brother Fairmind, the boxing New Universal Church caller who wasn't above busting a few heads to keep his flock on the straight and narrow. Valentine hadn't seen an episode since he'd returned from the Cascades. Odd how he could still remember characters and their plots, relationships, and alliances. The desire to check up on the story plucked at him like a bad habit.
I had a feeling we hadn't heard the last of former Consul Solon. What are the underground reports?
Scattered stuff. You'd think with Kentucky in turmoil, the Kerr would be grabbing pieces off of Ohio and Tennessee, guarding bridges and invasion routes, putting extra troops into the rail arteries north through Lexington and Louisville. But it's just not happening. To the north, the Ordnance has called up some reserves and shifted troops to support Louisville, or maybe move west to hit your group at Evansville. But as for the usual apparatus of the Kurian Order, we're getting word of churchmen leaving, railroad support people pulling out. If anything, they've pulled back from the clans, like they're a red-hot stove or something.
Their troops in Evansville revolted. Maybe they're afraid the infection will spread.
I'd like your opinion on that. What's Kentucky like now? Every legworm rider who can shoulder a gun shooting at the Kurian Order?
Nothing like that. The Moondaggers came through and just tore up Kentucky and hauled off any girl they could grab between 15 and 30. Really stirred the locals up. The place is in flux now. Hard to say which way it'll go. They might just revert to their old semi-independence as long as the Kurians don't aggravate the situation.
We were hoping the control was pulling back to more defensible positions and assuming there's a new freehold being born.
I don't think much will happen until spring. That's the rhythm of the legworm clans. They settle in close to their worms for the winter until the eggs hatch.
I wish I had more. You know the underground. They have to be very, very careful. What they get me is good. There's just so little of it. Kurian agents are...
dangerous?
Yeah.
Valentine rubbed his uneven jaw. The fracture hadn't healed right. A reminder of his encounter with a Kurian agent working for the Northwest Ordnance when he'd found Post's wife in a Reaper factory called Xanadu.
I wonder how many we have in this headquarters. We tend to win the stand-up fights, yet more often than not, they figure out a way to make it seem like a loss. Walk down the street in Little Rock.
And one out of two people will agree that Texas and Oklahoma were defeats.
Valentine had heard about the famous Clarion War Poll just after the Kansas operation, repeated endlessly in articles and opinion columns since. That had been the last operation he and Post had shared, a blazing offensive that tripled the size of the old Ozark Free Territory. But it just gave the Clarion more cities to report bad news from.
So what do you think I should do?
Get as many as you can back across the Mississippi. We can use them here.
And leave the legworm clans hanging. They threw in with us in Javelin.
It might be all right. The Kurian Order needs that legworm meat for protein powder and cans of wham.
They exchanged grimaces. They'd both eaten their share of wham rolls in the Coastal Marines. Wham was a canned meat product produced in Alabama, filled out with bean paste, and sweetened with an uninspiring barbecue sauce to hide the tasteless, chewy nature of legworm flesh. Three tastes in one, the cans proclaimed. The joke with wham is you got three chews before the flavor dissipated, and you were left with a mouthful of something about as succulent and appealing as a pair of long johns worn for a week. It went through the digestive system like a 20-mule team sled. Three chomps and run, the cook on the old Thunderbolt used to recommend. It was a staple of Kurian work camps and military columns operating far from their usual supply hubs.
There has to be some good news.
Full list and details or just bullet points?
I need cheering up. Give me the full list.
I won $60 this week at poker. It's a short list.
I think you're right about that ulcer.
Post's advice was absolutely correct. Javelin hadn't worked. It hadn't died. In a way, it had won, dealing a death blow to the vicious Moondaggers. But it hadn't worked out as planned. Give it up and move on, the way you folded when you drew into a promising poker hand and came up with nothing. Except the pieces were scattered across Kentucky along with his bit of ear, and they included a big, hairy, golden one named Anka. Tika, brave and lusty and vital. And the former Quislings who'd put their lives and the lives of their families into jeopardy by switching sides. Southern Command had run up a big bar tab in blood.